Welcome to the Made Up Savannah podcast. I'm your host, Dee Daniels. Made Up Savannah is a creative production of Corcoran Austin Hill Realty, serving Savannah since 1978. And the Made Up Savannah podcast is brought to you by Savoy Society, colleagues and lovers, and the Savannah Cabaret. Who's looking for a fun night out? I'm always raising my hand for that. It's about that time of year when we'll have some family coming into town, and of course, you want to entertain them with something new and totally fun. Well, we have just the thing. Savannah's best live music and theater experience, it's Savannah Cabaret. And you're in luck. Tickets are now on sale for the production of Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein at savannahcabaret.com. Tickets are on sale, savannahcabaret.com. This production is going to be everything. But you need to reserve your tickets because they will sell fast. I promise you that. The show runs April 18th through May 5th. Go ahead and get your tickets now before they sell out. Based on the classic 1974 movie, it's the hilarious show that tells the story of Dr. Frankenstein's grandson, Frederick, who is struggling to create his own legacy separate from his family's name. It's going to be a monstrous good time on Jefferson Street in historic Savannah. A fabulous cast and a laugh out loud great time, but only if you have tickets. SavannahCabaret.com. And later this year, we've got time traveling drag queens in the 1960s, maybe a little case of the cabaret killer. Doesn't that sound fun? Go get your tickets at SavannahCabaret.com. That's SavannahCabaret.com. Welcome to the Made Up Savannah podcast. I'm your host, Dee Daniels. I could not be more excited to sit down with my next guest. I would love to welcome to the show Captain Judy Helmy, Miss Judy Charters. This is so exciting. Captain Judy, I've heard so many stories about you. My first question is, are any of them true?
Well, they're all true because they're so good. I think they're so good. They're too good to have made up. And I couldn't remember them all. How could I remember all these stories, all 600 of them?
I thought there were more than 600.
Sure there are. I'm just, you know, there's one story that has many tales.
I love your little tagline for Miss Judy Charters, kicking fish tails since 1956.
That's exactly when I started fishing with my father on his big wooden boat. And he, you know, my mother got killed in an automobile wreck when I was about six. And that's when Kicking Fishtails since 1956 was born. So I would go on this big boat with him, and it was a lot of fun. And I had a lot of room, and I get to talk to the customers. And Daddy said I had this unique way of telling whether or not they were going to throw up or turn green. He would say, are they going to turn green, you think? So I still do that to this day. We pick out, on our way out, we always go, who do you think is going to get green today?
Do you have somebody throw up on...
Pretty much.
Not
every trip, because we have a lot of regulars.
Okay.
But we do have people. Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh. I get it. I mean, I love being on a boat, but I do get a little...
You get sick in the ocean?
I mean, a little bit. It depends on how long I'm shaking and rattling and rolling.
You know who gets sick the most? Is people who say they are retired Navy. It's the truth.
Is that right?
We always say, oh, I'm sorry. if my first mate was in here, Kathy was in here, and we all, and I said, what about Navy people? She go, oh my God, we have Navy people. I don't know why it's that way, but I guess it's because the ships move, everything moves differently in the ocean.
Right. That makes sense.
And I feel sorry for them when they get on the boat. I'm like, oh my gosh. And being sick, think about being seasick. Now you're fine.
Yes.
You're just fine. You're sitting there and you're fine. And the next thing you know, you're throwing up.
Right.
It's horrible. And guess what happens after that? If you really are seasick, it takes 20 minutes for the acid to build back up in your stomach after you throw up. Mm. So you're going to be sick every 20 minutes. I try to explain it to them. What they need to do is after they throw up, they need to lay down. But sometimes they don't want to lay down because they think that makes it worse.
Right.
And sometimes it does. But 9 times out of 10, if they lay down, they can't get back up. But they can lay down and not throw up.
Is there a cure all for any
land?
Get off the boat. Well, you heard it here first. That's the for sure. Miss Judy, I know that you have been here all your life and doing so many wonderful things here, and so many people have great memories with you. And tell me how things started with your dad, because your dad's quite the has been quite the popular character here in Savannah and Tybee Island and on the water. And how did that all get started
for
him?
You know, my father, he left me a lot to write about.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of the stuff I wrote prior to the Prohibition Museum opening up in City Market, you would hear me say allegedly, allegedly, allegedly. Now I officially say Daddy worked for Al Capone. It is official, and he has his own corner at the American Prohibition, because my father worked for Al Capone during 1930 to 1933. Now, I wasn't around then, of course. I didn't come around until the 51, but the things that he did and told the customers, I remembered them. Yeah, he would just tell the customers, they would be around. I think sometimes they wanted to hear more about his stories than going fishing. I mean, you know, I look up there, they were about all around his seat, and he was just blah, blah, blah. But he enjoyed that. That was a good time of his life, because it was business as usual. Back then, you know, gangsters, it was a business. They had a job to do. You know, Al Capone came to Savannah, and they stayed right there at the DeSoto across the street.
Is that right?
Yes, the old DeSoto.
Okay, yeah.
The new one. And my father's store, my father's shop was next door to Bradley Lock and Key.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that, in other words, it's Bradley Lock and Key, the vacant lot, and then my father's store.
Okay.
That's where it was. Yep. And it's just amazing how he met him. You know, he came in, he had a brand new truck, and he said, well, something's wrong with my truck. And Daddy said, well, you know, if you wait till in the morning, you can take it down to the Ford place. It's right down there. It's under warranty. He says, I don't want to take it down to the Ford place. Can you fix it? He said, yeah, but it costs almost more than the truck's worth, brand new. He said he didn't care. It's a vegetable truck full of all these vegetables. So wow. Daddy said, it's, you know, whatever it was, he settled up with him. And he says, can we change clothes? And he said, yeah, there's a restroom right over there. And they changed clothes. And when they came out, they had top hats, tails, tucks on, and patent leather shoes.
Whoa.
And Daddy said, okay. He said, will you please bring the truck over to the DeSoto when you finish? And then Daddy said, okay. So Daddy went back to his office and got real quiet in his shop. He went back there. The guy working on the truck was drunk. And Daddy started looking around. He said, oh, my goodness. So he started looking around about what was in the truck. So Daddy worked all night long, fixed the car. He was a mechanical wizard. He fixed the car, or the truck, or whatever it was, and he took it back, and he tried to leave the information at the front desk, and they said, no, they want to see you upstairs.
Oh, okay.
Daddy said, I don't know how they knew that man drank all that liquor out of it. All you see is he was crazy. And so when he walked in there, out there he was, Al Capone. And Daddy said, oh, he said, do you know who I am? And Daddy said, I think so. And it went from there. And Daddy went to work for him, just going and getting cars for him, making them so that they didn't look loaded with things like liquor. Daddy called them shoe salesman's cars. And they brought the liquor in from Wausau and brought it to the back of Wilmington Island.
Was he ever scared, you know, getting involved in this?
Well, he never went to jail, but it was business. He said it was always business. It was a handshake. He never did see the really bad part about what went on in Chicago. Now, this was on Wilmington Island.
Right.
And everybody was involved. The police department was involved, because you had to have clear way from the Wilmington Island all the way through here to get the liquor. So, you know. Cars were, Daddy said he marked the tires so that they knew which ones to let go, let pass.
Wow.
His record service picked up the cars that broke down and towed them to wherever they were supposed to go. It was a business. So I think it was run a lot differently here than it was, because there were so many local people involved.
Right.
And the place where they brought the liquor in, you have to understand, these guys, they wear $100 shoes. They don't know anything about driving a boat. So Daddy said when they made the arrangements, they would bring the big boat as far as they could, and then they take the little boats out, fill them up with liquor, And you know, we have a tide here.
Right.
And you know about the tide.
And a big one.
So he had to build platforms. He built platforms with whatever he could build them out of so that they could move the liquor off the medium-sized boats. And the rowboats came out, rowed out, and got it. And he said there was so much going on. They would be meeting them in the sound, stealing liquor. They'd be pushing them off the platform, stealing liquor. You know, I mean, everybody was stealing. He said, if you get caught, you're going to get killed, you know. But these were guys that really knew what they were doing.
Obviously.
So, and they pulled up under Greens. There was a place on Wilmington Island called Greens that hung over the bluff, and it was a trap door. I have pictures of it and everything. And
wow.
They loaded up, rode the boats right under there, backed the trucks up. It had its own entrance, loaded up the cars, and went out of there.
Wow. And so he worked with them for 3 years?
3 years. And during that time, boy, I got this family, like, it gets worse. It's worse than you can think. So during that time, he had lunch with Fidel Castro.
No way.
In the soda.
Oh, my goodness.
The company had a deal. You know, a lot was going on in Cuba. You know, a lot of gambling and the mafia was involved in a big way. And so, you know, they had a lot of control over there. Everybody had a lot of control that was in the gangsters. So when Fidel Castro came over here, he had lunch with Fidel Castro and Big Al.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what he ate? I'll never forget as long as I live. Raw chicken.
What, raw chicken?
Raw chicken. You know, like we eat raw steak.
Man, I was going with shrimp and grits.
I know, but you know, they didn't have shrimp and grits then. And that's what he ordered was raw chicken. I'm like, Daddy, are you sure?
Oh, God.
He said raw chicken. You know how we eat raw steak, tartare steak?
Oh, yeah.
This is how they ate. That's what he asked for.
Oh, my goodness.
But here's the killer. Then my daddy could go to Cuba. When I got born, I could have went to Cuba. And boy, I'd have been in high society, especially with my daddy having lunch with. Then my uncle or my cousin, he flew a plane into Cuba and tried to kill Castro. And his last name is Helmy, too. So, you know, now we can't even ever go to Cuba.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, now that we can talk about it.
Right.
Now that we couldn't talk about it very much then because we didn't really know. But my uncle, Biggs Reds, and he wrote a book called The Lemon Dance.
Oh, wow.
And he went 1969, hijacked a Delta. I can't remember what it was, a Delta, which one it was, and hijacked him and made him take him to Cuba.
So you haven't had an active family at all.
No, I mean, it's terrible.
Boring.
No, it's been
no
very
stories.
Boring. My father, I mean, I could just start with Daddy's first marriage where I wasn't around. When I started being around and thinking about things and understanding things, he would tell me, you know, I wasn't very married very long to my first wife, 21 years.
Oh.
I had a half-sister that was, oh, my God. Her children are my age.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and, oh, my God, and all the stuff. I got copies of the divorce decrees. We paid alimony for 45 years.
Wow.
Because it said permanent alimony. And I finally got copies of everything because I'm writing another book about it. And it's going to be a Wong Donger, I'm telling you.
I have a feeling.
And the divorce, which says permanent alimony, as long as she didn't get married, remarried, and she didn't.
Well, I guess you wouldn't if you're getting permanent alimony.
Well, it's another story, but I don't know if I want to get into that.
Okay.
I know
okay.
why.
Wait
she
for
didn't
the book.
Get
married. Well,
and I better leave something.
Right. So, yeah. You got to tease something.
Yeah.
Hey, quick side note. I don't know about you and your friend group, but our friends. Well, and we are too, are always looking for a great brunch spot. And I've got the perfect thing for you. It's our wonderful partners, colleagues and lovers in Habersham Village. They are now serving lunch. And yes, my friends, brunch on Saturday and Sunday. But check this out. Friday, Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 3, you can go to Colleagues and Lovers in Habersham Village and get a fabulous lunch. Yes, you can also get cocktails because that's how we roll in Savannah. They've got Bloody Mary on the menu, mimosa on the menu, and the other stuff, coffee, tea, iced tea, Coke, you know. But more importantly, the food. Let's talk about the salads. Balsamic beet salad, a chef salad, and fabulous looking sandwiches. 5-spice chicken, roast beef. Ooh, a good chicken salad sandwich. Doesn't that sound nice? And of course, they've got pasta at Colleagues and Lovers. But check this out. Brunch on Saturday and Sunday. You can get pancakes, plain or blueberry, and I love Eggs Benedict. Take your friends, make a date. You're going to love it. Colleagues and Lovers, 4523 Habersham Street, Habersham Village, colleaguesandloverssavannah.com if you want to check out the lunch menu, the dinner menu, the brunch menu, and more importantly, the drink menu. Well, speaking of books, I mean, this recent book that everybody's raving about, this Mob Island.
Wow, it's like a walk in the park with me when I read it.
Now, you're telling me there's a lot of truth going on in that book,
well,
right?
Well, Bubba Holt, you know, I knew him. He's a great guy. But he must have had a photogenic memory, or he was a genius in the wrong, for all the wrong reasons, everybody would say.
Right.
Even though I liked him, I was one of those kind of people that liked everybody. But, you know, they frowned on him because he was always called in to protect and do the bad guy. And he was good. He was a good attorney.
That's what it sounds like.
Oh, he was. He was good. I mean, he would find a loophole. I mean, if you actually shot somebody right there, he could find a loophole and get you off.
Good guy to have his card, I guess.
Exactly. But, you know, people were mad at, you know, people of statue.
Yes.
You know, they would get upset about it. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, you know. Think about it. And then the judge would say, you got to, Bubba. You got to do it. I'm going to call you in to do it. You got to be his attorney. You know, and he would charge. You, if you've read the book, you know he charged by Chevrolets. Two Chevrolets. Chevrolets cost $5,000, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, he was pretty unique guy.
It's a pretty good pricing system if you think about it.
If you think about it, it's a good way to get money and not really talk about it.
When did you start running boats?
Well, believe it or not, I ran boats when I was very young because my daddy, you know, my father liked to go fishing and he also liked to go out at night. So he was tired, and when this is how I learned how to drive. I was very young, like six or maybe seven, and my father had a big ship's wheel with spokes on it, and my father wanted to go to sleep because he had to go out that night. So he had been out the night before, so he had to get some rest. So he said, "Now listen, the boats wouldn't go but 8 or 9 knots." He said, "Now Judy, I tied a string on the spoke that you're supposed to leave up," and he says, "Now, remember, when we're going home, you remember how we go to Florida sometime and visit? Florida's over here, Judy. It's over here. And South Carolina, you never go to South Carolina because why? Because of the sandbars. Don't go over there." Mm-hmm. So two spokes is too many. You better keep this boat running straight. And then I figured out that when I turned it, the compass would move. And that's how I learned how to drive. Exactly how I learned, and him snoring down front. Now, when you see the lighthouse, wake me up. Because, you know, I had to cross the shipping channel before I could get in there to Lazaretta Creek.
Yeah, and you were six or seven.
Six or seven. Can you imagine being in the back of the boat and coming in there and go, "Who's driving?"
Right.
Actually, I would have been better off driving than him because, you know.
Right.
That's how I learned how to drive. And my first trip was when I was 14. And it wasn't a scheduled thing. My daddy booked too many people or too many people showed up. And he said, I can't. This is before insurance. Before, I didn't have a license till I was 18 because I couldn't get a license till I was 18.
Right.
So daddy said, "Hey, my daughter can take you." I said, "What?" He said, "My daughter can take you. Her boat's tied up next to mine."
No problem. Here we go.
Well, I didn't care. You know, I've been fishing.
You'd been doing it, yeah.
I've been fishing
old hat time. For you.
It was an old hat for me.
Uh-huh. Well, but still at 18, you were the
youngest
in Georgia.
I was young. I think on the East Coast.
Were you?
In fact, I was called the illegal captain for 4 years. They had a file at the Coast Guard station. They had to give me, I couldn't even pass the test because I was taught, this is terrible what I'm fixing to say. But I didn't understand. I was colorblind, kinda. And the red and black buoys, they just all looked stupid to me. And trying to cross the shipping channel, always knowing the ship was going to run over me, I was having a lot of trouble with that. And so I was just learning from Daddy. I used to follow Daddy home. Well, one day I had to go home. They said, "We're sick. We got to go home." I'm like, cross the shipping channel.
Oh, no.
But I did okay. I'm here.
Yeah, I would say so. Still running boats.
Yes, still running boats. But I really
at the tender age of
72. Whew. I know it's terrible. I'm like 40 million years older than you.
Well, you look 29, but
I like you so much. I don't feel my age. I still do everything. I still run the boat. And I still change my own oil because if no real good charter boat captain would not go in a boat 50 miles offshore and not change their own oil, check their engine every
day. Is that a trust issue? That's purely on...
Well, you know, you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
The law of averages.
Yeah.
You know how many trips I've run?
Right.
I mean, oh my God, I couldn't even imagine. So, I've always checked everything. Get down there in the morning with my flashlight. I mean, I can't help it. And I haven't been able to, my foot was hurt, so I haven't been able to get down the bilge. So my first mate, she's been doing it. And she always says, what are you doing down there? Now I say to her, what are you doing down there? You know, you got four things you got to do and four things you got to check. So it's just going offshore. You have to respect the ocean. I've been in a lot of situations out there where I'm pretty bad. So, but, you know, we have to keep our head on straight and we got to know that our boat's in the best shape it can be in.
Right.
Because it break down, you know, even though we take very good care of them, they still break down. They're mechanical.
Right. Right.
And you know about that.
Yeah. I call people like you who know more than I do. Do you have a favorite trip you've been on, a favorite place you go to, a favorite spot?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I have. I talk about this all the time. And no, I'm not giving it up. So y'all can, whoever's listening to this, there was a German submarine.
Okay.
And this German submarine, and I tried to find it in the newspaper about this because it had to be in the newspaper. This was during the time when shrimpers could shrimp anytime they wanted to in the Savannah River.
Okay.
So this German submarine came in here and it got caught up in a shrimp net. And one boat, it turned over. One shrimp boat, it turned up. This was at night. The next one, it bent the outrigger. And don't ask me how my daddy knew where it was, but he did. And it went offshore and it sunk. And do you know that the Germans, when they put you in a submarine, they had a booby trap on it because they didn't want you to get out of that submarine. So that it just blew the hat.
Right.
So that's what happened. And the reason I know all this is because Daddy took divers out to the German submarine. There was a Texas tower instead of a light where you come into the shipping channel. It looked just like we call it the Texas Tower because it looked like an oil rig. And Daddy would put his stern to that oil rig and he would run over here and over there.
Right.
And he would go straight to that German submarine and he would take divers. I remember him just like it was yesterday. I'd be on the boat with him as a child.
Wow.
And except Daddy would tell me, like, Judy, there is a lady living in the sub. And I'm a child, you know, I'm like. And the divers would say, we saw her and it's glass. They've got glass over the hatch and you can see her, but she can never come out. I'm like, what? You know, I'm a kid. I'm, you know, like.
You're dying to see it.
I'm dying to see it. I want to help her, you know.
Course.
You know.
Can we get her out?
We can't get her out. Daddy said we can't.
Mm.
So I never questioned when Daddy said we can't.
Of course.
I never questioned when he called a mermaid. And she begged him to let her go. And there was only a little bit of blood on her lip. And she had long blonde hair and half a fish body. I'm like, oh, my daddy, what did you do? I let her go. And now I'm catching her every day.
Oh.
So, you know. Now, we don't catch them anymore. We just, when we see, we know where they live.
Yes.
So when we just see them, we wave.
Yes.
But we don't do anything. Daddy, you know, they were brutal back then.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole different
ballgame. It's a lot of catch and release. Right. A lot of, you know, finding out what's in the ocean. You know, a lot of schooling.
So he had big fish stories, basically.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And he taught you how to have big fish
stories. Yeah, he did. You know, I feel sorry for fish. And I do, because we fished. What we know about fish is incredible. I mean, we know so much about a fish. When I first started fishing in the Gulf Stream, which is like 80 miles out, I figured out there was a fish, like a wahoo. You ever heard of wahoo?
I have heard of that, yes.
Yeah, there's a wahoo. And these wahoo are the smartest fish. They can be going 100, they can be going this direction and turn around 180 degrees and then they'll be over here. But there's this bird, a tropical long-tail yellow-beaked bird that follows the wahoo. Because the wahoo, they know that the wahoo will kill and the entrails will float up and that's the best thing for them to eat. And he mimics the movement of the wahoo.
Oh, wow.
So I found out this by mistake because I'm looking at this bird and I'm going, why are you so low? I'm looking at, I'm up here, I'm talking to myself because I'm on the bridge and I'm going, we're not catching anything. I bet there's a fish under that bird over there. And then I noticed that there was oil. When they make a kill like that, it floats up to the surface and the birds get to eat it.
Mm.
Well, they're known as tail cutters. They cut, first they do is they disable their prey. They cut their tail off. Then they turn 180 degrees and come back down and they pick the bait up. It's
after
not
it
bait.
Rises up.
It's what it starts doing is it's still alive, but it's fallen in the water column.
Okay.
So when they come back, they take it. They might knock the tail off of 3 or 4 fish, come back and eat them all. These are big 100-pound fish.
Wow.
Well, when I figured out about that bird, we became bird watchers.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell all those guys on the boat, now listen, don't tell me you're not going to look for birds. We're not going. I said, yeah, we are. But we caught some of the biggest wahoo you could ever believe under those birds.
Oh, wow.
And I did it a different way. You know, if you get a wahoo hit, you have to immediately free spool. If you don't free spool, that means the wahoo missed taking the tail off the fish he was going to eat.
Okay.
So you got to have enough line to just never stop free spooling. Take it out, do something, just never stop. And I make them drop all the lines back. Drop every one of them back. That's called prospect fishing.
Hmm.
And when that wahoo would come back to pick up that bait, it would be on. He would be out the water, he would come.
Oh, my goodness.
He looked like a king mackerel on acid.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It's just, I got to learn a lot about fish.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, they're so interesting, you know. And we never really, we had a lot of electronics, but to be honest, we never knew how to work it, you know. But we had to have it because saltwater sportsmen, the Bible, said, you know, you need a fish finder and all.
Right.
And we did have them. And so, you know, we did have fish finders and they worked pretty good, but none of us could. Daddy and I, like, you know, do you understand all this stuff? I'm like, nope, but we got to have it, right?
Right.
Like when Loran first came out, which was, oh my God, it was, you had to turn all these knobs and line up the mat. I got a thing at my house that says, one of the knobs says master and one of the knobs says slave.
Mm.
Can you imagine that now?
Oh, my goodness.
You turn the master, and then you turn the slave until it's over the top of the master. And whatever number comes up over here, then you take that number, and you write it down, and you have to do the same thing so you get coordinates. Then you have to go to the chart. And there's a lot of things going wrong between there, there, and there, and there.
Oh, my goodness.
And we'd be 3 miles off. I was better off just dead reckoning. So was Daddy and I. We both figured it out. Those units were $2,000 a piece, and we never did figure out how to use them.
It's funny because I've heard that from people that have lived here all their lives saying things like the technology on boats and going fishing and all that sort of thing. If they went on their instinct instead of using the technology, it ended up being a lot better. They knew what they were doing. They knew which way things were coming.
When we went to the snapper banks, which was 40 miles out, I had a watch with a minute secondhand. 1 hour and 45 minutes. When you got an hour and 45 minutes, you better throw the buoy out.
Right.
Because if you don't throw the buoy out, you're going to miss the whole thing.
Right.
So we would have like 3 or 4 buoys. And these aren't plastic buoys. We didn't have plastic. We had metal can buoys.
Wow.
Because they didn't have plastic buoys.
Right, right.
And our cans of oil came in paper with metal on both top and bottom. So we would throw that out. We would take window weights, you know, sashes that were in windows. Like when we moved the windows out, we'd get all these sashes and we'd use 2 or 3 sashes to hold it down. Throw the buoy out. You fish around the buoy all day long.
Mm.
But you would drift, but you better not drift very far from that buoy. And
right.
That buoy also marked how to get back home.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense.
But you knew, because you knew, if the wind was blowing out of the north southeast, which it did quite often, you knew you had to compensate. The crab, your boat actually didn't look like it was going the direction it was. It actually, because it does it now on the GPS. When we're going into the wind like that, the boat looks like it's traveling like sideways. We call it crabbing.
Right.
But most people don't even understand that because they use their GPS. It's on their boat. And I get it. I fish so long. It's just part of my life, but
yeah, you can do it.
This technology,
eyes closed.
Yeah, but this new technology, I got it on my boat. It's the most incredible stuff you have ever seen in
your
life.
Is that right?
I can tell you right now, I can go catch a fish here. here, and I'm going to go fetch a fish here. Now, listen, you be ready when you drop that weight down because you're going to catch a fish. They go, you know, these are non-believers.
Yes.
Boy, they don't be non-believers very long.
Does that take any of the fun out of it, having such technology?
No, because, you know, we got to live with the times. Mm-hmm. People, they don't believe what we say most of the time, even though it's true, because I wouldn't believe it either.
Right.
I wouldn't believe me. You know, it's all crazy. You know, I'm going to go over here and catch a fish. Well, I am going to go over there and catch a fish.
Yeah.
This new stuff, I can tell you exactly where the fish are.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right there. Drop it. No, don't drop. Don't you drop it till I tell you.
Right.
You dropped it, didn't you? Pull it in.
I told you to wait.
And you know, and boy, when they get kind of mad at you, sometimes they get a little attitude. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, we're going to have another school right now. And this is what my first mate says. Don't make her mad.
Don't make her have lesson number 233.
27.
All right. You brought up crabs a second ago, and it made me think of, you told me that you know the inventor of the crab cake.
I do.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So there was a place, a Tassie's Pier in Thunderbolt, right at Thunderbolt Marina.
Mm-hmm.
And the man's name was Tassie Salas. S-I-L-A-S, I believe that's what.
Anyway, and this was right on the
right
water.
Right there. If you were in the water looking towards Thunderbolt Marina, there was a big building. You'll see a lot of piling where they had to take the building down because, you know, the piling's broke. And they, because sometimes you go to the bathroom in there and you go, oh, look at the water. You know, things happen.
Right.
But Tassie, the first crab cake I ever had, and it wasn't even called a crab cake. I don't know what he called it, but he had these little crab cakes. I'll never forget sitting at the bar with Daddy. Of course, you know, I wasn't old enough.
Right.
But I still sat at the bar with Daddy.
You were old enough to have a crab cake.
I darn sure was. And I remember old Tassie throwing them all around, you know.
Oh, wow.
He was the inventor of the crab cake. It was real crab cake.
Oh, I bet that was good.
And you could come there by water because he had docks and everything, or you could drive up in your car.
Right.
And he was an entertainer.
Now, what happened to that place?
I think what really happened is the pilings underneath the building became, you know, to fix that, you probably couldn't even get a permit to fix.
Right.
And I'm not really sure exactly, but I know they had to tear it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And trying to put that much money into something. We're talking about mega, mega money. And I'm sure that's where they ran up. And then, you know, the only person who probably want to rebuild it was Tassie.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, so many people now, I mean, are always itching for a place to go eat on the water and
it's a dying thing.
Yeah.
And you're going to see more of that. I think there's so many people now. There's, you know, what they don't understand is all these ice houses and bait houses and fish houses that live on the water so that the boats can come directly in and unload, they're selling all that out.
Right.
The infrastructure's being sold out because they can get more money than they can make with selling the... But what people don't understand is, where are we going to get our fish from?
Right, right.
We're not going to be eating the fish from here.
Yeah.
We're not going to know what we're eating.
Right.
You better get yourself some good tartar sauce recipes. And cocktail sauce.
Right.
Because you're going to be eating farm-raised everything.
Right. Where do you like to eat fish and seafood?
Okay, so I like to go to the Flying Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Just about everybody that fishes with us is right down the street from us. He's got a special for him. They bring the fish they catch. He does a family thing and fries them, blackens them. Everybody goes. Just about everybody that fishes with us goes.
Nice. That's a nice place.
It is.
It's nice.
I love it.
Always a good time.
It's always a good time. And the fish, think about it. The fish was just swimming. And think how fresh it is. And
right?
You think you know fresh fish. You know, people come from Ohio. They were from Ohio today. And they are not going to even know what fresh fish until they get to the Flying Fish they cook something they call. They were so excited.
I bet.
It completes the visit, you know?
Do you still get excited for people that have never been here?
Oh,
and
I get excited.
Experiencing it for the first time?
I'm excited about fishing.
Yeah.
I like it, you know, and it's a lot of fun. And you never know. You never know what you're going to see, and you never know what you're going to catch. You don't know what you're going to have to deal with.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff out there in that ocean, you know. Great whites are, you know, we always saw them, but I guess they thought we were drinking or something. Right. I don't know. Because they were going, there's no great whites here. Well, I guess there is. There's plenty of great whites here, especially Mary Lee, that was like 28 foot long, comes down the side of my boat.
Oh, wow.
Got, and I had a blue, I have a blade of paint, which is paint that sloughs off the bottom so that marine growth can't stay.
Right.
She went right down the side of my boat, and all my customers went, what is that? I said, I think that's Mary Lee, because she had that cookie cutter out of her fin. And I knew that she was in the area because O-Search had pinged. Well, let me tell you, as soon as Mary Lee went by and blue paint came off the boat and got on her, my customer said, you can take us home. I said, listen, I promise you we're not in any danger.
We're fine.
Because she was 18 foot long, and my boat's 32 foot long.
Yes.
That's not big enough, they told me. I couldn't even get them to stand on the rails then. They would like try to fish from the middle. I'm like, you can't do that. Okay, I'm taking you home. Take us home is what they said. I couldn't even get my camera out fast enough to get a picture of her. But I did save a dolphin because she was fixing to eat a dolphin.
Okay.
A big one. And she set sights on me. Oh, well, I'll just eat this boat.
Right.
And when she went down the side, it freaked everybody out. The customers, I thought they might have needed some therapy when they got up.
So you felt it? I mean, did you?
She went right down the side. Oh, yeah. She went right down the side and rubbed the side of the boat. And the customers were like, oh, you know, they thinking about Jaws and coming up. Yes. And I'm like, oh, my. Listen. And, of course, I did say, and I don't know what made me say it, oh, my God, I think we need a bigger boat.
Oh,
I didn't mean anything by it, but I should have never said that.
Oh, no.
They I said, I'm that. Kidding.
Yeah.
Take us home.
That was a joke.
Take us home. I'm like, okay.
Now, what about the, we've heard a lot this time of year about the right whale coming through here. Do you ever spot any?
Yes. In fact, before there are rules and regulations about how far you could stay from the right whale.
Right.
I was supplying them with lots of information about the right whale.
Right.
I mean, I found out so much about the right whale because we could spend time with them. And I never hit one or anything like that, but do you know that in 30 foot of water, when they stop, they could put their tails down and they stick their heads out the water?
They could be straight
to look
up and
around.
Down. Oh my goodness!
I mean, I've got pictures of them. Then I had video. You remember when video? No, you're not. You're young. Video cameras were this big.
Oh no, I remember.
And they have that VHS. They would be on the bow.
My dad had one on his shoulder.
You know, that was. Oh my God! I got pictures, and I have VHS. Yeah, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
The one I did with one of the TV shows. And I need to get it recopied so I can see it on a CD.
A digital now.
Or
yeah.
something,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was telling them all about the whales and how we get whale trails, you know, because when they're going south, they're going to have their babies.
Right.
So when they get in 30 foot of water, when they're flopping, they're bringing sediment up. So these birds come to feed all the sediment that comes up from the bottom.
Right.
So that's how you find them. You know, you just have to look for the sediment. They make trails.
Right. Because then they eat that too, right?
Right. And they eat the krill or whatever.
Right.
They eat that. But then that's why the sharks are here.
Right.
They come here to eat the babies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this is the good thing and the bad thing. If they're really quiet when they come back, they get in deeper water so they don't make the trails. They get away from where the sharks think they might be. And then when a boat hits them or something, thank goodness that can pull them away from the ones that are alive because they go straight to that fish because right whales got their names because they're right whale to kill.
Right.
So because they float.
Yeah.
They don't die. They don't go under like all the other ones. That's why they killed all of them, because they float. They could kill 15 whales and tie it up to their boats and then clean them from there, get the whale blubber out of them and everything else that they were going to get. They made corsets out of the bones, and it was crazy.
It is crazy. And I couldn't believe I can't believe how big they are.
80 foot.
I mean.
I saw one. I got a picture of one. I was like, oh, if it gets mad at us, what are we?
Right?
Yeah, but, you know, they
They don't get mad. They seem calm.
They seem calm. But there was this, the sinking of the Essex was a wooden vessel that was attacked and completely destroyed by a whale. Now, I don't know if it was a right whale, but the reason, the noise, they were doing some repair work, and this was the captain's account of it, doing some repair work. So they were driving a peg or something with a mallet, and that clicking noise must have been a sound that two male whales make before they fight.
Okay.
And that whale destroyed the sink. That's how the sinking of that, and there's been a book about it. I was never so shocked in my whole life that that was the noise that caused the whale to do it. Wow. That's all they can come up with is why that whale attacked them.
Right.
Now, here again, I don't know if it was right whale, but these whales are 80 foot long.
I mean, you know, and there's a lot of talk about like the speed of the vessels and what goes through
yes,
here.
Yes, it is.
How do you work around that or slow down
So back in the old days, we went 10 knots with the wooden boats. We weren't going nowhere fast.
Right.
But when we started getting speed, we would go 15 knots. And my father always said, steer away from everything. He called it steer away. And when we saw big schools of Spanish mackerel, king mackerel, you want to run right through them.
Right.
When you see bait, you want to run. I don't know why. We're fishermen. We just want to run right through. You know, right, we want to do everything stupid.
Right.
So my daddy always taught me, go steer away because fish are feeding in that.
Yeah.
So whales, you steer away from birds, you steer away from things feeding on the surface, you steer away because we would hit things if we didn't. We hit sharks, you hit big manta rays, and going at 15 knots, you know, it's very bad. Turtles, so we know now to steer away.
Right.
But these new boats, they're going 50 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
There's really no chance of slowing that down in any time to...
No, but most of those boats do have to go 10 knots. And they're, you know, they're asking that people do go 10 knots. But a lot of times it's an accident.
Right.
But there's been so many of them killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do, and I don't mean the shipping industry at 10 knots would kill a whale.
Yeah.
Because they get hung on the boat, you know.
Yeah.
So they fold on the boat. So any kind of direct hit. But it's a sad thing.
It is. Yeah, it is. You know, I feel like so many people that come here now are, especially those who have never been to Tybee and Dufusky and, you know, are looking for kind of a full experience. You're able to give them a really full experience.
Well, and my whole goal when at my age, what is that?
At 29 and a half?
Yeah,
that's
cool,
right.
Cool. So right now, I do, when you go fishing on my boat or you go on my boat, it's not a fishing trip. It's everything.
It's an everything trip.
It's an everything trip.
Yeah.
So when I do quit fishing, what I mean by that is quit taking people fishing. My plan is just to, you can hire me and ride around in my boat and I just tell stories.
Yeah.
So I call it the good and bad and ugly tour. How old are you and what can you take? Because there's so much bad things
yeah.
that are funny.
Yes.
But not really bad. But not for, there's adults and children's
yeah,
stories.
Yeah, there's an audience. You need you to
gotta
know
make
your
audience. The
audience.
Yes, I know. I do. I could do the audience. So.
Yes.
So I'm thinking about doing that, you know, so.
I love that. I would sign up for that tour. I love that.
Hey, I'm thinking.
That'd be my favorite
you know,
one. I'm going to sign up for the adult version, rated R.
You want the adult
version. I want
version.
The full on.
The adult version is unbelievable.
See, that's what we want.
Yeah, my daddy, he left me a lot of stuff to write about.
Have you, you've written a book.
Yes, I wrote one book, My Father, the Sea and Me. That book was, when I read that book now, I go, oh my God, look at all the stuff I left out because I didn't even know some of the stuff.
Right.
I found it out later. And the stuff I have found out, you can't even believe it.
What was the most surprising thing you found out?
Well.
Or is that saved for the second
one? No, I can tell you about one of my father's wives. My father was married. We're trying to figure out exactly how many times my father was married. I'm from the second marriage, and my mother got killed in an automobile wreck. But then there was four after that.
Okay.
And then there were the ladies that lived with us that took care of me when Daddy wasn't around. Those were the nannies.
Yes.
Now, we weren't rich or anything. I had to have somebody take care of me. Well, yeah, there wasn't no daycare centers.
Yeah, that's right.
And my daddy was gone out all the time. Anyway, so this one wife, but now I can't find where they got married. So I was okay. You're just not going to believe this story. Okay, so she could jump. Daddy liked spirited women. So she could jump out of a car going 30 miles an hour and land on her feet still make a run. Okay, so without that being said.
She was a daredevil.
I'll never forget this long as I live. 1969, the phone rings, and it's the police. We need for you to come down to the police department. We have a body up here we're trying to identify. Okay, I'm riding with you, Daddy. This ought to be something. So I rode with him, and I sat in the car. I'll never forget it. He comes back. He says, Jeanette's dead.
Oh, goodness.
I said, okay. Well, you know, I didn't really have any too much dealings with her. I hated that she got murdered.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, murdered by a serial killer. One of the biggest serial killers. And it's all, this is going to be unbelievable. But it gets worse. And then it gets better. And then I found out in 1980 that the detective who was in charge of the case interviewed Pee Wee Gaskin, who is the murderer. He's the serial killer. While he was on death row in South Carolina, and he told him all about what he did to Jeanette.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm talking about from A to B to C to D, Bobadoo. And he was that kind of guy who would say, and when I lit the match set her on fire, I could, and this kind of stuff. Anyway, I have all that. He described it so greatly that they closed the case.
Wow.
They closed the case, and it was one of the biggest murders that were ever taking place here.
Oh, my gosh.
Hang on. Hang on.
Here we go.
It wasn't Jeanette.
No.
She called me when Daddy died in 1993.
You are kidding me.
So they closed the case. That's not the case that they closed.
He had tried to identify the body.
He did identify her, but the reason he identified her as Jeanette is she was very badly burnt.
Okay.
But she had on Jeanette's wig.
Oh, my gosh.
She had on her jewelry and her clothes, because, you know, they kind of roomed together and they wore each other's clothes. And I can tell you why she had to wear a wig. She wanted to be a blonde, and she put this stuff on her black hair, and she got drunk and fell asleep, and her hair fell out.
Oh, my Lord.
So we had to get wigs. So it just goes on and on and on.
My mouth has been falling open for 10 minutes, just so you know.
And it's the truth.
What did you do when Jeanette called you?
I'm like, I got questions.
I bet.
Question, why didn't you? My father never knew anything about her from the time he went to the police station to 1993 when he died.
Wow.
So here I am going, Ellen, who is this?
Ooh, wait, who is this?
You sound familiar. Oh, I'm sorry about your daddy.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, who is this? Jeanette. And I was so dumbfounded about the whole thing.
I bet.
So it gets even more crazy.
Oh.
As if it could, right?
Okay.
They buried somebody on the Helmy plot.
Thinking it was Jeanette?
Yeah.
So what do we do there?
Well, they dug it up.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It wasn't officially dug. I wasn't a hole officially dug.
It was an unofficial.
Yeah, because when I went to the Helmy plot, I said, I put Daddy here next to my mama.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. There's somebody already there. I said, no, there's not. Yes, there is. I like, well, you. So I said, that's impossible. Impossible.
Right.
And it wasn't impossible.
No.
It was a very interesting funeral.
I bet.
They had to dig up, make another hole. Make another hole, put the hole.
Oh, my goodness.
So she's not. So what? My question is why she never tried to contact my father. Why?
That's a big question. Did she have any answers for that?
I couldn't ask her because I was in shock. I just buried my father. I didn't even think to get her phone number.
Of course.
No caller ID then.
Of course.
No cell phones.
Oh, goodness.
So I am leaving myself with my own problems. Those are my problems. I'm trying to find out what's going on. I am in the midst of finding out exactly what my daddy did.
Tell me the name of your first book.
My Father, the Sea, and Me.
My Father, the Sea, and Me. What's the second book going to be called?
I'm going to probably call it Kicking Fishtails since 1956.
I like that. That's a great name.
But I got to figure out where to go with this.
Yeah.
So if I just told the story about my mother,
yes,
and all the stuff I have about that and all the stories that I have about her and leave the father out without, I mean, not leave him totally out, but this other thing mm-hmm. with Jeanette, this is a whole book in itself.
That is a whole book.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sure they might dig him up. They could dig him up and put him back in the courtroom.
Boy, that would be an interesting conversation.
And I would let him, because I want to have a few words with him myself. He has just, golly.
He lived quite a life.
He did. Oh, and he, like, on one of these marriages, he paid him, like, I'm going to give you $600, go away. One marriage didn't last 6 weeks.
Wow.
We had John Calhoun, which you probably don't know because you haven't been here long enough. John Calhoun was one of the biggest divorce attorneys in Savannah. Then we had Duffy, another big divorce attorney. And then we had, who was the next one? Fred Bergen.
Oh.
Joe Bergen.
Yes.
Joe Bergen, Fred Bergen's daddy.
Okay.
They were like, this is how it went.
Making sense now. Okay.
This is how it went. And then, you know, oh my God, I never knew. And then, you know, there was all these stuff going on. I just hadn't got all the papers yet.
But you've got all the stories.
Yeah.
You could do a part two or a new book or.
I could. And then, you know, actually I could write a story about the Sheraton, or which is the Oglethorpe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I spent a lot of time there when I was a child. I loved it over there. It was really fun.
How much has downtown changed since you were.
When I came in here, I was like, oh, my God. I rode around this whole thing three times trying to find this building.
Yes.
And I've been living here all my life. Yeah. And I knew this building was here, but I couldn't figure out. When you get old, sometimes. And I have navigation in my car, but I can't figure out how to use it.
Yeah.
And I don't care to use it.
Right. I get that.
Now, if I was in my boat, this would be a different thing.
Whole different story.
I'd tell my boat to take me somewhere, and it would. But downtown is something else.
It's gotten a lot busier and more active since you were
almost here. And I don't want to run over anybody, but I'm going to drive real slow when I leave because these people, they just.
It's a lot of pedestrians. And you
got to be careful.
Yes. And especially here at Liberty and Bowl. This is a very busy.
It is very busy.
No traffic light.
Yeah, we would have never let Daddy drive down here.
Right.
Because, you know, my father was.
Well, he wouldn't have been driving. He would have let you drive, and he would have been snoring in the back. Yeah,
exactly. Boy, I tell you what. I was driving a car way before I was able to drive because he would get in situations. Come and get me.
Right.
Oh, and then the police would call me and say, come and get him.
Yes.
Because they
yes.
wouldn't want to put him in jail because, you know, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
What they didn't want to have to deal with what might happen if they put him in jail.
Right. Do you remember when the Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil book came out?
Oh, my God.
The movie and any of that?
How true of that is
in
the 70s.
Yeah.
How true was, oh, my God, that thing. I could just, you know, all that stuff was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that stuff did happen. You know, people not being home and them turning on the lights and having a party and the Jim Williams house. Oh, my God. All that was sure enough real.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties.
Yeah.
And it didn't surprise me when it all happened. I loved it because it has a Dr. Buzzard in it. And
yes.
That, well, I don't remember. What was the name of that lady who was the witch doctor? Who used to talk to the
yes.
squirrel.
I can see her. Minerva.
Minerva, okay.
Minerva. Constantly, still, we have people stop and ask us about Lady Chablis and Club One and where she
Lady
used to
perform. Lady Chablis made the movie.
Yes.
And they said they had no control of her whatsoever.
Oh, I can only
she
imagine.
She never read the script.
Well, she played herself.
She made her own script.
Yes.
And she had nothing to lose.
Yes.
But they should have took every film a bit they could of her because she was a trip.
Yes. Yes. She absolutely made it.
Did this show one time. It was called the Ruby Wax Show. And she came to Savannah and she picked out five of the most unusual characters in Savannah. And guess who was one?
Lady Chablis.
And me.
Oh,
and
yes.
And Uncle Bobby.
Oh, I love it.
And who else? The Shoe Man. Jack. Oh, my gosh. You can't believe I can't remember his name. Anyway, I'll think about it in a minute. But we all got on the boat, and we were telling stories about everything. Jack Gilmore.
Jack Gilmore. Okay.
Jack Gilmore, he had the shoe place.
Okay.
He passed away not too long ago, and you could still get your shoes fixed. I think his family still running the shop.
Mm.
But, yeah, we were the most interesting characters, and we ended up going and singing midnight train to Georgia.
Oh, wow.
With all, and it's, I have that. It's on VHS.
We got to find this VHS converter
for her. It is a trip. Yeah. We were all singing that, and yeah. Uncle Bobby was singing. And
oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
It was a trip.
I bet it was.
Because he would say, no, that is not what you think it is.
All right, before we wrap up, let me ask, who else was a pivotal person in your life for who you've become today
and what
you've done here?
I think that, to be honest, my father, he was the one.
Yeah.
But then I had these people in my life, over the years, that the ladies that took care of me. There was one lady in particular. She was, it's like when she came to work for us, she knew more about me than she should have.
Hmm.
And as it ended up, she was like a tarot card reader. And
oh, wow.
She could talk. I mean, it was really unbelievable. And she saved my life. Because you remember the trussle that blew up where all the people got killed and everything? I was supposed to be there.
Oh, my goodness.
And she begged my father not to let me go.
Wow.
I was so mad at her. I was like 8 or 9 or something like that.
Wow.
And it burnt everybody instantly. Bam. Families were lost. 4 or 5. I mean, family members, 8 or 9 family members. There's one family that lost their home. And she pitched a fit for me not to go.
Mm.
And I was so mad at her. And sure enough, she said, please don't let her go. You'll never see her again.
Oh, my goodness.
And my daddy said, okay, she's not going. Sure enough, that's what happened. So, you know, people in my life have guided me through all kind of things. But my father was the main thing. And he was there a long time. He lived to be 93 years old.
And everybody called him Moose?
Well, he was called Moose during the Al Capone era.
Okay.
And then after he got out of that unscathed.
Yeah.
When the 70s came and the drugs came to Savannah, big time, Daddy said, we don't do drugs. We don't know about drugs. We're still involved, but we're not involved with drugs.
Right.
So we didn't haul any drugs. We had plenty of opportunity, but we never did. And then when he got his license, he became Captain Helmy, and he was Captain Helmy ever since. Moose before.
Right. That's a good name.
Yeah, I like it.
That's a good name. Well, if you want to catch a glimpse of Miss Judy, you can do that and check out Miss Judy Charters. How long is the waiting list to get on?
No, it's not. You
All
can
right.
call.
They can
you
call.
Can just call me. And
all right. MissJudyCharters.com, too.
Yes, and we have a new website, place. And I don't even understand it.
It's a good-looking website.
It's got me talking. It's moving.
I know.
I'm like, how do y'all do?
Technology.
Thanks to Susan Sparrows.
Miss Judy, I'm so excited that we sat down and did this. I can't wait to jump on a boat with you. I hope I get to do that.
Well, I hope you do too. Just come on down. We'll go for a boat ride and I'll give you the tour.
Yes. And the adult version.
And there's still
version.
More.
The
to
adult
come.
Version too.
The adult okay. version.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate yeah. that. I'm old enough.
The adult version is pretty bad.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you
your
for
stories.
Having me and this giving me this opportunity.
This has been a blast.
Hey. It has been a blast, and you've been great.
And you can come back anytime.
Thank you. I'd love to.
All right. This season, we're so proud to partner up with a trendsetter and a trend breaker in Savannah's historic district, the incomparable bar and restaurant that hits all the marks and sits right at 102 East Liberty Street. I'm talking about Savoy Society. You know, we fell in love with this downtown hotspot well before we even moved here, and it's captured our hearts even more as locals. Now, it's my favorite spot to grab a lemon drop martini. Mm-hmm. Hands down, best place to get a lemon drop martini. And I even like to try something new on occasion, like a sourdough flatbread, a slider, maybe even a new cocktail if I'm living dangerously. But don't even get me started on Me Gusta Mondays and the hot honey margarita, because once I tried that, Savoy Society, seriously, you had me at vinyl and wicker. The long bar, the cozy sofas, oh, and the pickled deviled eggs, and the mini hot dogs with the tots. It's a whole vibe. If you Google it, you'll see the popular opinion is the bartenders are just lovely. That's an understatement. They're really genuinely amazing. Stop by Savoy and tell them you heard about them on the Made of Savannah podcast. Savoy Society Sav, S-A-V, if you're looking for them on Instagram. Also, SavoySociety.com. Check out the full menu. You know, some people have a dream home. Some people have 10 dreams about buying property in 10 different places. At Cork and Austin Hill Realty, we always want you to live who you are, wherever and whatever that dream looks like. You hear businesses talking sometimes about how long they have served a city, but do you ever stop and wonder if they mean that's how long they've been in business there? Or do they really mean that's how long they've served that community? Corcoran Austin Hill Realty truly serves Savannah. Yes, I mean the region, but I really mean the people, the history, the business developers, the nonprofits, all communities, all backgrounds, the buyers, the sellers, the investors, the mom and pop shop owners, the first time home seekers, the young, the matured, and we've been doing it, serving you, since 1978. Corcoran Austin Hill Realty sits beautifully at the corner of Liberty and Bull Streets in historic Savannah, home of the Made of Savannah podcast studios, and home to a huge group of people ready to serve you. 251 Bull Street, Savannah. Stop in, ask questions, see local artists at Location Gallery, and check out available listings at CorcoranAHR.com. Thanks for listening to the Made of Savannah podcast. Do us a favor, write us a review, give us a rating. Make sure you subscribe or follow the podcast and share this podcast with someone you know. Follow us on Instagram at Made of Savannah, and a huge thanks to our sponsors, Savoy Society, Colleagues and Lovers, and the fabulous Savannah Cabaret. If you or someone you know has a great Savannah story to tell, be sure to get in touch with us. We would love to hear it. The welcome mat is always out.